If you have been considering futures trading, now might be the time to take a closer look. The futures market has seen increased activity recently, and Plus 500 Futures offers a straightforward entry point. The platform provides access to major instruments, including the S&P 500, NASDAQ, Bitcoin, natural gas, and other key markets across equity indices like energy, metals, forex, and crypto. Their interface is designed for accessibility. You can monitor and execute trades from your phone with a $100 minimum deposit. Once your account is open, potential trades can be executed in two clicks. For those who prefer to practice first, Plus 500 offers an unlimited demo account with full charting and analytical tools. No risk involved while you familiarize yourself with the platform. The company has been operating in the trading space for over 20 years. Download the Plus 500 app today. Trading in futures involves a risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to the Crypto 101 podcast. We're excited to have all of you back here with us. We have another really exciting interview in store for all of you. Today, we get to talk a little bit more about stablecoins. This has been a huge talking point this year. There's been all new forms of adoption and regulation. And because of that, you all have asked for us to bring in all sorts of founders and people who are pioneering the space. And that's exactly what we're going to be doing. We're exploring a whole new side of it. We have Lorenzo. He is the co-founder of USDT0. And Lorenzo, we're excited to have you, man, and welcome to the show.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having me. And it's a pleasure to meet you, Brandon.
Absolutely. You know, likewise over here. Now, stablecoins are an interesting part of the space because for the decent past that crypto has had, you know, they've always kind of been around, but they've been growing every single cycle, every single year, and they've become this integrated part of the crypto ecosystem where they encourage liquidity and they encourage people to have a safe haven when things go up. And there's a lot of talk about them. And now all of a sudden we're starting to shift from people using them just inside of crypto to looking how people can use stable coins, even in the TradFi markets. You know, how can we tie these to governments and countries and treasuries? And how can we do so much more with this idea of stable coins, even looking at tokenization and a bunch of other things? And I think you all have a unique approach to this when it comes to cross-chain liquidity and kind of ushering in what stable coins can be in this next kind of step into the future. So, man, we're really excited to be able to talk to you about this. I know the audience is as well. Before we even get into the nitty gritty of what you're actually doing, just introduce yourself to the audience and kind of where you come from and what got you into this and kind of interested in it.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so my name is Lorenzo. I'm one of the three co-founders of USDT0. I've been involved in and out of the industry for the last 6 years of my life, basically after my second year of uni. I'm a DeFi guy myself, so my roots in the industry are around the DeFi projects, lending markets, decentralized AMMs, and so on and so forth. And then for the last 3 years of my life, I've been basically focusing more on Tether-related products. First worked on Alloy, which is a very interesting way of creating a stablecoin by basically backing it only with Tether Gold, using a CDP, collateralized debt position setup, if you will. Then I've been focusing quite heavily on native USDT deployments, how they operate, how they get executed, and so on and so forth. And that's basically where the idea behind USDT0 was born. And we basically, our pitch is very simple. There's one amazing asset that works basically flawlessly, which is USDT, and we just make it 1% better by making it fully interoperable between networks. About myself, as I said, I mean, I'm living in Lugano, which is in Switzerland, a pretty cool place to live, very Bitcoin aligned, very crypto aligned. We can go around the city and pay with, like, I think it's like 300 shops, with either USDT, USDT0, or Bitcoin. Wow. And I am myself, I guess one of, you could call me a Bitcoin maxi. I've always been around the Bitcoin ecosystem. I'm very, very close to a lot of people that are building on Bitcoin, and I'm a big fan of Bitcoin itself.
You know, fair enough. He was saying he was in Switzerland, and we were joking before we started. I was saying, man, you want to switch spots? You can come to the U.S. I can go to Switzerland. But, you know, we were joking that the U.S. wasn't and hasn't been too crypto friendly. But that has started to change here over the last year or so. How has that directly impacted the stablecoin world and the adoption that you've seen as someone who's building in this space?
I guess a lot. Historically, as you said, the US hasn't been the most friendly jurisdictions to build in and out of crypto, I guess, right? But thanks to the new administration, as well as some of the things that happened with the new administration, I would say we really got a better ecosystem right now, right? Like, it's been quite clear to me that the positions that the US has taken on stablecoins and stablecoin expansion have been directly tied to the big growth that the whole stablecoin world is seeing, I guess. Mm-hmm. There's also to be said, though, that the big narrative of this cycle is indeed stablecoins, right? Mm-hmm. Like, everybody's building a stablecoin, everybody's building a chain for stablecoins, yep. and so on and so forth, interest-bearing, decentralized, and so on and so forth. So it's definitely something that is on top of mind for everyone who's working in the industry. I'm personally been around stablecoins for the vast majority of my professional life, if you will. Mm-hmm. I remember when in 2015 nobody was using Tether, and then people slowly started using it during the ICO era, and now that is grown into a full-on freedom tool, if you will, because now stablecoins are being used in third world countries and less developed countries as their main mean of exchange, yeah. Right? So it's very, very important. And for me personally, it's very exciting to see, because I think there's very few technologies in crypto that can be put on the same level of stablecoins when it comes to the changes and the rippling effect that they create.
All right, Crypt Nation fam, let's pause for 1 second and talk about an important issue going on right now, and that's SIM swap attacks. SIM swap attacks are becoming a serious threat, especially in crypto. If someone gets control of your phone number, they can access your bank accounts, your exchanges, emails, and even your private messages. That's why the Crypto 101 podcast is partnered with Afani. It's America's most secure mobile service, offering a guaranteed protection against SIM swaps with added privacy. Since launching, not one single Afani user has ever been SIM swapped. And for some reason, if it ever does happen, you're backed by up to $5 million in insurance against financial losses. This is literally why we chose to partner with them. It is our favorite thing about Afani is the insurance policy of up to $5 million if it does happen to you. Afani runs on either AT&T or the Verizon network, and you get to choose which one. There are no contracts, and it is super easy and seamless to sign up. You also get a 60-day money-back guarantee, so there's zero risk in trying it out. Right now, for our listeners, you get $99 off when you sign up at afani.com/crypto101. That's afani.com/crypto101, or check the show notes below for a link. These days, your phone number is probably more valuable than your social security number, so make sure it's protected with Afani. All right, Crypt Nation fam, are you interested in effortlessly growing your Bitcoin portfolio? Because I know I am. The Bitcoin credit card by Gemini earns you Bitcoin back on every purchase. Use it like any credit card. You buy lunch, you get gas, any of your weekly grocery expenses, and you'll earn up to 4% back instantly in Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos straight into your account. All that with no annual fee. And right now, you can grab $200 of Bitcoin. That's right, a $200 Bitcoin welcome bonus with the Gemini credit card. It is the easiest way to start building your Bitcoin stack. Go to Gemini.com/card to learn more. Terms apply. See the link in the description for more information regarding rates and fees.
Yeah, you know, over here, I think that there's three big categories that are seeing a lot of excitement in crypto. I think it's stablecoins, DeFi, and tokenization. And you could kind of say that stablecoins play a part in both DeFi and tokenization. So you're kind of getting the best of both worlds in that sense. But there is a lot of adoption. There's a big push. And you said something that stood out to me. And it's something that we've talked about on the show here in the past. And it's this idea that, you know, you said in some of these developing countries, stablecoins are being used. And that's a normal thing for them. And a lot of the time, you know, users like myself who might be from the United States, we think, I didn't use stablecoins to get groceries. I didn't use stablecoins to go, you know, pay for my subscription and this and that. And it tends to be a rather limited view of thinking is because in my, you know, highest level of my banking system in the United States, in a very fortunate position, because I don't use it, it's not being used elsewhere, or people can't use it elsewhere. And I think it's a really flawed way of thinking. And what we are seeing, especially from what you just said, is that this is being used around the world. And for the people who might not be as fortunate and have access to this, like, you know, A-tier banking system, well, I think that's where stable coins come in. And eventually, I think it will be used. You know, you look at a lot of these, you know, A-grade banks and asset managers, and a lot of them have talked about filing and talked about their interest in stable coins. or several of them have actually already gone ahead and started filing for their stablecoins behind the scenes. And so I think we are moving in a direction where people in the United States and people who have a more traditional credit system, I think they're working their way towards using stablecoins on a normal basis, but it's already happening around the world, right?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you literally say what my usual story is. Like, I live in a country which is Switzerland, where it's very, very easy to get a bank account. You can probably get a bank account in a matter of 5 to 10 minutes on a bad day. And stablecoins are not a technology that was developed for me. I use it, and in certain situations, they're very helpful, but I am not, in my opinion, the target group for which stablecoins were created, right? Like, stablecoins were created for people in Africa, in India, in Latin America, that live in countries where there is ultra high levels of inflation, and that stablecoins are effectively the safe haven and the only thing that can save them from the failing countries that they find themselves in most of the times, right? Like, think about it like this. What I always say when I talk about Tether specifically, because there is effectively no second best when it comes to stablecoins, when it comes to stablecoin real usage, if you will. All of Africa, all of India, and all of our Latin America, and a good part of Asia runs on Tether. And the reason for it are multiples, but effectively, what really matters is that these people are living in countries where you work for a vast majority part of your day, and then you save, and then your saving gets devalued 200, 250, 300% every year, just because the currency that they are using gets devalued constantly and inflated constantly. So for them, saving in USDT is basically a safe haven, and the only thing that they can do to maintain the actual, you know, purchasing power and so on and so forth. That's where I think stablecoins were made for. That's the people that are using stablecoins. That's the target group that we should all build towards. And the whole Tether team has been absolutely amazing in getting this product market fit and just leverage it to as much as possible. And you're right. I don't think necessarily stablecoins are made for people like me and you that live in Europe or the US, where it's very easy for us to access the traditional financial system. But I think this thing is changing. Like, there's more and more usage, and it's pretty exciting to see.
Well, let's talk about what you're working on now. You know, you're working on USDT Zero. And I already know one of the first comments or questions that people are going to send our way is, what is the difference between Tether and USDT Zero? Can you just kick things off by walking us through that?
Yeah, okay. That's a usual question. So very, very easily, USDT Zero is effectively the unified liquidity layer for USDT. Now, that's kind of a mouthful, so I can dive into it and explain it, right?
Yeah.
Historically, there's been a big problem in DeFi and in crypto in general in having a single standard to move Tether between networks. You probably know that the most famous standard for Tether tokens, which is native USDT. Now, native USDT is an amazing tool. It's an amazing product, but it has one big problem. It's not interoperable. That means that if I have USDT on Ethereum, it's very, very hard for me to bring it over to Tron and the other way around. And what that has resulted in is basically a very high concentration on few ecosystems, mainly Ethereum and USDT. Ethereum and Tron. Ethereum and Tron together are like, I think it's like 95% of all the market cap of USDT right now. So it's very, very concentrated. What we are doing over at USDT Zero is that we're kind of democratizing this whole system. And we're saying, well, native USDT is amazing and USDT is an amazing tool, but we need to make it somewhat better, a tiny bit better, by making it fully interoperable. What I mean by interoperable, it means that you can easily move it between networks completely for free without any limitation of size and in a fully permissionless manner, which is very important. USDT Zero is built on Layer Zero. I don't know how familiar you guys are, but Layer Zero is basically the leading and most used messaging protocol in all of crypto. Multiple large tokens are built on the same standard that we are built with, USD from Athena, Pengu, WBTC, and so on and so forth. And we're just taking this already battle-tested technology and applying it to the best stablecoin in the world. And the way it works is pretty straightforward and elegant. We have one hub chain, which is Ethereum, and users lock USDT on Ethereum, and then they receive a representation of those locked USDT on Ethereum on whatever chain they decide to go on. That sounds like a pretty simple idea, but since we launched it in January, we really got quite insane traction. As I said, we launched it in early January, and since then we've moved more than 13.5 billion USDT between networks.
Wow.
We are the canonical USDT on Optimism, on Arbitrum, on Polygon. We're going to be the canonical USDT on Plasma. We are the canonical USDT on Unichain and on a bunch of other new and exciting networks. And what we have found is that the moment you give this technology to users and you just allow them to move their assets between networks, you know, without any barriers and without any frictions, adoption just skyrockets. USDT Zero is constantly one of the top two, if not top one, bridges in the world. We move between 60 to 150 million USDT between our supported networks every day. And we're just seeing constant uptake in both adoption, volumes, and usage. So it's been very exciting.
So when we're talking about interoperability, you know, does that mean that people don't have to worry about losing their crypto or sending their, because that was a big issue. People would have USDT and then they'd send their USDT on Ethereum to maybe try to send it to like a Tron address, but then there's different addresses and they try to send, you know, a Tron version to their Ethereum address and it's an issue and things can get lost.
Exactly. And this,
yeah, go ahead.
It's very complex, right? Like the whole system is not, it's not the ideal UX to get to the next billion people, right? Like you have these fragmented chains isolated with liquidity that is completely isolated between each other because you cannot touch them. Like you cannot easily tap into liquidity on different networks. And then on top of it, you have other versions of USDT. You have bridged version, wrapped versions, IOUs, and so on and so forth. We just increases constantly the risk for the end user, because let's say that I want to have USDT on five networks, then I'm likely going to be exposed to five different isolated risks. And that's not really the way to do it and not something useful. And what we're doing over at USDT Zero, we're just consolidating everything under one single secure and battle-tested standard. And just, it's kind of like an adapter, if you know what I mean. Like you can just have your USDT Zero now soon on Plasma, and you're going to be able to easily send it over to Arbitrum with the same risk factor and completely for free.
You know, so clearly this makes it easier for the users and anyone that's newer to crypto, right? They don't have to come over and they don't have to worry about bridging or making sure that they're on the right chain or any of that stuff. And I think that's one of the big benefits of this. That's one of the big whys as to like why you all are doing this. You know, I guess why else do you believe that this kind of technology, that this kind of use case is essential in a multi-chain world? Is that just for new users? What else goes into that?
I think it's mostly new users, but it's also it's also the fact that we're going towards a world where every single large institution will have its own chain. Right, like we've seen multiple chains come up in the last 3 to 4 years, and the more time goes on, the more I'm seeing new networks and new technology and fintech providers create their own chains. There's Tempo, there's Plasma, there's Arc coming up now, Monad, Mega, ETH, Parachain, all these new networks they're trying to build their own ecosystem in their own siloed entity. And what we are doing with USDT Zero, we're just unifying all of those different entities and all of those different ecosystems into one single large shared liquidity layer. And that's been quite exciting for me. And I think it's also very, very important when it comes for everything that is built on top of those ecosystems. DeFi, tokenization, centralized exchanges, payment processors. If you live in a fragmented world, it's very difficult to build two solutions and tools that are well executing, if you know what I mean. While if you have this shared liquidity layer, then it becomes very, very easy. And every single product can just focus on being the best product it can be, rather than having to focus on also growing a lot of USDT liquidity on its own, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I take away from this is that, you know, if we're building a multi-chain world, that kind of insinuates this idea that multiple chains are going to be able to succeed and be around for a long time. And it kind of goes against this idea of a one chain wins it all victor. Right. And there's a lot of maxis out there who say, no, the future is only Ethereum main chain. The future is only XRP. It's only Solana. It's only this or that. But I think this kind of idea says, no, you know, it can be more than that. Would you say that the world is big enough for multiple chains to succeed here and all be interconnected?
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, if you think about it, that's basically how fintechs have always behaved. Yeah. Right? Like you have multiple isolated solutions that are very vertically integrated in their own niche, if you know what I mean. And mm-hmm. I consider somewhat of a maxi myself, to be very mm-hmm. honest with you. Like I'm a big Bitcoin guy. Like I have a big percentage of my net worth in Bitcoin. I trust Bitcoin and I believe in Bitcoin. But I also understand that there are certain use cases for which Bitcoin is not built for. Stablecoins maybe are one of those. Now there's a lot of new technologies coming up, Lightning, RGB, Spark, and so on and so forth. But at the core, Bitcoin was built for something different, which is being the plan B if the whole world was, part of my English, to go to shit. So that's quite important. And to me, like, the way I'm seeing this whole thing is everyone will come up with their own ecosystem. Some of them will consolidate under Ethereum. Some of them will live on Solana. We, as a stablecoin provider and as a liquidity solution, we shouldn't pick winners in this. We should be agnostic and we should make sure that each one of those ecosystems can tap into this unified liquidity layer that we are creating.
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it well. And there's just clearly a lot going on. And one of the biggest things that stuck out to me lately was that Tether hired Bo Hines, who was a former White House crypto advisor. And it kind of got my brain stirring. I was thinking, out of everywhere that he could have gone, like, why did he choose Tether, right? And that's not like a good thing or a bad thing. I'm not saying any of that, but I'm saying, like, he came out of the White House as an advisor in charge of all this stuff. And he said he could basically have gone anywhere. He could have gone to Coinbase. He could have gone directly to Ethereum. He could have gone anywhere. And he says, I want to go to Tether. Like, why, from your perspective, clearly you work closely with Tether. Why is that the case? Why did he choose Tether, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, I don't want to speak for Bo or for Tether, obviously, but at the same time, for me, it's quite simple to understand it, right? Like Tether, I have a strong belief that mm-hmm. Tether is going to be one of the most important companies, not only in crypto, but in the whole world in the next 5 to 10 years. There is nothing that is going to be able to leverage up the current geopolitical situation or financial situation in the whole world as good as what Tether is doing. Mm-hmm. They're building products that are not specifically only for crypto. They're building products with one goal in mind, and that goal in mind is freedom of speech, monetary freedom, freedom of information, and so on and so forth. And if I could choose any company in the whole world to be contributing towards, and that's what I chose, it would actually be Tether, because you're pushing forward these very important ethos and these very important missions that are fundamental for, I think, humankind in general. So I totally understand why he did that. There's no better company to join if you're coming out of the White House and you want to help shape the regulatory frameworks and the way this whole ecosystem, this whole new industry will work, than rather than Tether.
Well, as we've said earlier, there's a lot of different groups getting involved with stablecoins now, right? I mean, you have governments, you have the retail traders who have been around, and now you also have institutions. And so there's this clear shift that's happening where more attention is being put into stablecoins and the idea of them and how they're going to be used. But who do you think benefits the most from them? Is it the governments? Is it retail traders? Is it institutions? Is it all three?
I guess all three. I mean, again, we go back to the same argument that we talked about in the beginning, right? Like, the real people that will benefit from stablecoin adoption and decentralized technology are the people that are currently sitting last in our societies, right? Like the people that have been debanked, the people that do not have access to our financial toolings, that do not have access to all of the things that we sometimes give for granted, right? Like I can go on Amazon and I can buy myself a phone online with my credit card, and that's something that most people in the world actually cannot do. So given as a fact that they are the real people that are getting their life changed and that we should all build towards helping, I think that all three categories that you mentioned are going to be benefit heavily from stablecoin adoption. I mean, if you're asking me, there's no better tooling than a US dollar-based stablecoin to benefit the US dollar hegemony in the world. Because what Tether is effectively doing is that it's bringing the US dollar to all of those countries and all of those people that would never actually have access to the US dollar. So government benefits from it, especially because if you're buying a lot of T-bills, you're effectively one of the largest lender of money to governments like the United States. So that's very powerful. Users like us, more experienced users also, are going to be able to have better ways to access traditional financial system through stablecoins, I think. Payment processing is one of the best applications of this technology. Like I always tell this story, which is that I had a Bitcoin wallet before I had a bank account. So when my dad had to explain to me that it takes 3 days to get a bank wire, I was like, what are you talking about? You know, like I was living in London and I was a student. So my dad was sending me money to effectively live. And I was like, hey, dad, I have no more money. And he was like, okay, I'm going to send you a bank wire and it's going to take 3 days. And actually today is Friday, so it's going to be 5 days. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like 5 days to get my money? And can you get me a transaction ID so I can check the status? And he was like, but no, like just wait and then it's going to pop up in your account. And that's terrible, especially when it comes to like global trade and so on and so forth. Yeah. You need to settle stuff faster and efficiently. So that is also a good part. And then, yeah, at the end of the day, we're talking about a better technology. I'm a big supporter on the fact that whenever you're going to improve the technological layer, you're just going to get adoption. And that's, I think, what we're seeing so far.
It is silly that with how far technology and just humanity has come, there's still this idea of, oh, it's going to take 3 business days to move money from point A to point B without crypto. And I think that has to be one of the best arguments for this stuff and for it to be used. But, you know, I like that all three groups benefit, right? You look at governments, they get buyers of their debt. You look at institutions, they solve that issue of having to wait multiple business days for transactions to get moved around. They get something that's instantaneous and it's a fraction of the cost of what they already are using. And then for retail, they get the freedom that comes along with that, kind of benefiting like institutions. They get to have their funds instantly. You know, you could get your funds instantly. You can move it around and you can also scan it. You know, whether you're scanning for a payment in Switzerland or the United States, you know, if you're scanning that your crypto wallet and paying with that, it's going to be the same. You don't have to worry about the transfer fees. You don't have to worry, oh, does my bank work here? Does my card work here? Do they accept my cryptocurrency or sorry, do they accept my fiat currency or my crypto or this or that? And I think that's where USDT Zero comes in a pretty cool way, is that it can be multi-chain. And so this takes it to another level of, not only can you use crypto anywhere, but you can use crypto on any chain anywhere. And so regardless of whether they're native to one ecosystem, you're saying, hey, there's like a one-size-fits-all solution. And to me, it seems like that kind of interoperability is just the next logical step in crypto.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously agree with you. that's kind of what we're building towards. And in our mind, it's just, again, we're trying to give more freedom to the users, right? Like,
yeah.
We're still very early on in this technology, meaning that I try it every day. I go around and I try to live my life only spending USDT, USDT Zero, and Bitcoin, and it's hard because you're in front of you have vendors and you have people that really don't get this. Like you're like, so you're gonna pay me with this thing that it's US dollar based, but then why cannot I am sending you on this network, but you're telling me that there are 5 other networks? Like it's too complex. It's too convoluted. While with USDT Zero and with the technology that we are trying to pioneer here, it at least makes it a little bit better, which is that we're still working closely with payment providers to actually pilot these old programs. But what you're going to be able to do in the next 5 to 10 months is that you're just going to be able to say, hey, I'm accepting USDT on any EVM networks, for example.
Yeah.
This is my address. And as long as USDT Zero is deployed on any of those EVM networks, I can accept payments. And then automatically you're going to be able to receive USDT Zero on any of our networks and converge it on the chain that the merchant wants to have. And finally enough, this is something that also ends up being very useful for centralized exchanges, which are some of our closest partners and some of the infrastructures for which USDT Zero was built for, right? Like, exchanges have huge, huge problems to maintain their float supply, to rebalance constantly their float supply. When I talk about float supply, it just means that you need to have treasuries of USDT sitting on each of the networks that an exchange serves to be able to process deposits and withdrawals. But guess what? Sometimes those treasuries end up being empty. And then before us, the only thing that you could have done was go back to Paolo and the rest of the Tether team and ask for a chain swap, which is expensive, takes a lot of time, and sometimes it's not so easy to integrate in your infrastructure. Now with USDT Zero, you can completely on your own manage fully your whole reserve balances on any of our networks. And that's obviously very, very powerful. So we're just trying to build technology following this ethos, which is people should be able to move on whatever network they choose in total freedom without having to pay 50, 60, 70 bips per transactions. And basically still relying on the underlying security and technology that they already trust.
I mean, well said. And we're seeing more and more of that happen. And two unique situations that stuck out to me, a little bit of a, I don't want to derail us, but kind of putting us in a different direction, because it just kind of came to my mind. But two different examples that come to my mind specifically were Wyoming's launch of the Frontier stablecoin, FRNT. And then we saw different talks from a different area of the world on a more global level with the green light for the first yen-pegged stablecoin. And there's lots of conversations about, like, how do we make sure that this doesn't go the route of CBDCs? Because I think a lot of people are scared of that. And how do we stay this path where we can see growth and we can see maturity? And I know in the US now we have regulation that's kind of making sure that that doesn't happen. But how do we make sure that even if it's not a year or a couple of years from now, down the road, that we don't get towards this idea of a CBDC?
Yeah, lots to unpack there. So first of all, about the Wyoming stablecoin, this was insane for me.
Yeah.
Like, really, like I was here when there was only one stablecoin in the world, and I was here when decentralized stablecoins were just born through MakerDAO, and to see a state in the US actually issuing their own stablecoin, it was a very surreal moment. We also have one big thing in common with Wyoming stablecoin, which is that they were both built on the OFT standard. The Wyoming stablecoin is powered by layer zero, like we are. So that's definitely exciting to see. I haven't dived too deeply into what kind of distribution layers and railways they're building, but I think it's going to be very, very cool to see. And I'm definitely expecting a world where we're going to see hundreds of thousands of stablecoins potentially issued by the most different entities in the world, right? And then the other big topic here that you mentioned is CBDCs, right? Like, mm-hmm. I'm really, really scared about CBDCs. Yeah. I'm a big truster of decentralization and everything mm-hmm. that crypto stands for. And CBDC is the exact opposite of it. It's effectively a narrative that people in power and the traditional financial system is taking to be like, hey, look how cool I am. I'm doing crypto too. And then you're doing something that is the exact opposite of the industry that we're building on. I don't know what we can do to stop them from happening, but I know that I think it's a responsibility that every single participant of this ecosystem, builders and users alike, should always have at heart and always be careful on. Like, we cannot allow CBDCs to happen. We cannot allow central banks to control the monetary supply in that way. Yeah. And I think it's very, very important for it to make it happen. The other side of this argument, though, is the fact that we're seeing way more regulation and way more adoption, which from an institutional perspective, it's always good, because I'm a big fan of the fact that the more regulations, the easier to follow the regulations are, the better it is for everyone, because at least we have clear guidelines. And if we have clear guidelines, it's very, very easy to make sure you're not doing anything outside of those guidelines, which I don't think anyone is trying to do. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, taking us back to a point that we were talking about a little bit ago, back to tokenization, you know, our community loves hearing about this. Clearly, it's a hot topic. All these different groups are building towards it. You even have like mainstream brokerages now, like Robinhood has talked about it. And I think Kraken and Coinbase and all these different players who want to get in on this. Do you think that the growth of RWAs and other tokenized assets exemplify the need for interoperability and stable coins as a solution?
Well, to a certain degree. First of all, it's definitely helpful if you have a bond or anything else that's being tokenized on chain to pair it against something like the US dollar, right? Like, you don't necessarily want to pair it against something as volatile as Bitcoin or Ethereum. You probably want to pair it against something that is stable, proven, and that the whole financial system is already being paired against effectively. I'm a huge fan of tokenization and tokenization platforms. I actually just spoke today with the guys building Hadron. Hadron by Tether is the Tether's tokenization platform, and it's insane. They're really building anything from Bond to other stable coins and so on and so forth. I think it's very, very important. And there's two main takeaways here. The first one is that each one of those tokenized assets, as I said, will need to be paired against a stable coin. And if you add to this equation, the fact that you effectively have let me think how I can describe it. But effectively, you need to pair it, and then maybe you also want to pair it on a certain network, and now you have to effectively coordinate within every single network to get a unified liquidity, enough liquidity to actually trade it against. So that's where we come into play, and that's pretty cool. And secondly, what I really love is RWAs under the form of differently stablecoins that are denominated in non-US dollar assets, if you know what I mean. The one that I like, obviously, the most is Tether Gold. I'm a gold bug myself.
Yeah.
I love gold. I think it's one of the, I mean, it's not that I think, it's that it's one of the safest way to store money in the history of humankind, and it's absolutely insane. And that exemplifies perfectly the need for RWAs. Like, you can bring gold on chain through Tether Gold, and it's really amazing.
Yeah, I mean, shout out to gold. You know, we don't hate gold over here.
We love gold.
The world's big enough. Yeah, I mean, shout out to gold hitting new all-time highs at the time of recording this. It's done great. And listen, you know, we like to see all these different forms of assets. Bitcoin is all oftentimes referred to as digital gold. So yeah, I mean, good stuff around the world.
I think it's a very different system, right? Like, I don't think gold is in competition with Bitcoin. I think gold is in competition with the US dollar. I would love to be able to live on gold and to be able to spend gold every day and save in gold very easily. And it has never been easy enough until stablecoins pegged to gold actually were born. You know, like, we're living in a situation where I tried to buy some gold with my bank. They asked me for like 75 bips and took like 7 days. I was like, I can buy it I can go on Uniswap right now and buy some XAUT by simply routing USDT through CowSwap. Like, we're too, it's such an outdated technology that it's crazy.
Well, didn't you, I mean, you have a history with gold, right? Because if I remember correctly, you were part of the crew that launched Alloy and that linked Tether Gold, which is, I think, XAUT, to the on-chain world. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So Alloy is kind of my baby. Like, we contributed to it from the get-go. We actually came together with Paolo and the rest of the Tether team to actually execute this launch. It hasn't grown much yet because I think it's a particular product, right? Like, the power of Alloy is that we had this idea of, basically, this came after the 2022 Circle DPEG, when Silicon Valley Bank failed and USDC traded nearly 3 cents off for like 5 days. And our thought was, we need a way to basically detach, to have a stable coin that is completely detached to the from the traditional financial system. And there were only a few options back in those days. There was Liquity, which was, in my opinion, one of the best designed decentralized stable coins ever. But it had one problem. It was backed by Ethereum, and our belief was that Ethereum wasn't not mature enough to be able to scale to 10, 20, 30, 50, $60 billion in collateralized position. And our idea was very simple. We're just going to take this battle-tested design, which are CDP-based stablecoin, where the idea is I put some collateral and I borrow a certain stablecoin percentage out of that collateral. And we're just going to back it with the strongest and most resilient currency in the world, which was gold. And I think we're going to hear a lot about Alloy in the next few years, because all it takes is one big fuck up, if you know what I mean, or one big stablecoin that blows up, to basically explain to everyone why it's so important for Alloy to exist. The way I see it is basically is an apocalypse protocol, right? Like, as long as 1 ounce of gold backs one ter of gold, there is effectively nothing that can blow Alloy up. And it's very important. And it's just one of the multiple ways where you can utilize Tether Gold in a DeFi-like environment, right? Like, you can use it as collateral on Aave, the proposal just passed recently. You're going to be able, you can put it into AMMs, you can do all this kind of stuff that I think it's very, very powerful. And it's really going to do the next step for tokenized gold on chain.
What do you say to the people? I've seen a lot of people talk about this idea that Bitcoin and crypto is going to take market share away from gold, and we're going to see gold's market cap bleed down while crypto bleeds up, and the two kind of even out. There's been a lot of conversation about that, but I haven't seen any evidence, if that makes sense, that like that is going to happen. There's a lot of theory out there. And, you know, maybe this has something to do with the U.S. gold reserves. Like, there's all these theories, but not necessarily any proof. I mean, listen, you work with both. What are your thoughts on the matter of maybe crypto taking metals market share?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I'm a weird edge case. Like most people have like 5% of their portfolio allocation into Bitcoin, maybe, and the 10% in gold. For me, it's the exact opposite. Like I have basically everything I have in Bitcoin, and everything that I don't have in Bitcoin is either in USDT or gold. Yeah. But I think they work synergetically. Like if you think about it, Bitcoin is a better version of gold because it's mathematically scarce, while gold is not really mathematically scarce. Like you could find a huge chunk of gold somewhere and it could just inflate the supply. But the reasoning behind it is the same. We need something that is not easily inflatable by human greed or human decision makings. And to me, like what I think will happen in the next 5 to 10 years is that we're going to see gold eat up the market cap of the US dollar, not of Bitcoin. Mm. Bitcoin will keep rising, but I have a personal belief that in 5 to 10 years, one of the largest stablecoin in the world will be a gold-backed stablecoin and a gold-denominated stablecoin, because it's just logical to me. Mm. So what I personally do is that, again, I treat gold and Bitcoin in a pretty synergetical way. And I got pretty lucky, I guess, because the price of gold has been steadily growing and it was a good trade, I guess. But yeah. I just want to keep saving in gold effectively.
Hey, fair enough. This whole topic of stable coins is fascinating. And, there's not a doubt in my mind that as we move into the future, 5-10 years from now, people are going to be using these as essentially the same way that we use checking accounts. I think people are going to be transacting all sorts of different daily activities, right through stable coins, right from wallets. And it'll evolve a lot until we get to that point. But it's a lot of exciting stuff to look at. So, Lorenzo, we really appreciate you coming on here. Where can people follow everything that you're working on?
Our main social medias, I guess, at USDT0_TO. I have a Twitter, but I usually post about Pokemon cards that I'm not too interesting to follow. But if you want to follow me, I think my Twitter is @0lore, I think. ZeroLore. Yeah, exactly. So that you can follow us on Mirror, and then you can definitely, you're going to see us around on Twitter and multiple other places.
Awesome. Well, you all heard it here first. If you're interested in cryptocurrency, stable coins, gold, or Pokemon cards, make sure to check out Lorenzo. Certainly check out all the stuff that he is working on. And once again, man, pleasure having you on, and you'll have to keep us posted as the stable coin world evolves.
It was my pleasure, and whenever you need me, I'm always here. I'm in the front lines pushing this new technology, so it's going to be exciting, I guess.
Absolutely. Well, everyone that is listening back home, thank you all for tuning in. Of course, we're going to have lots of more episodes coming your way. If you ever want to make sure to check out and get more content from us, head over to our YouTube channel at the Crypto 101 Podcast on YouTube. Over there, you're going to get all the videos, all the charts, everything else, all the data that comes along with it. If we screen share or present anything, it's going to be over on our YouTube for all of our Spotify and Apple Podcast listeners. So thank you all for joining in, and we'll see all of you at the same time, same place next week.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.